And we're back to Pet Chat on 2NURFM with Dr. Kimberly Early. And today we're going to talk about prepping for pets for the holidays.
Yeah, well, prepping your household for having a pet, you know, at home and making sure you're all ready for the household for the Christmas holidays. So things that come up in my workplace are things like people calling us on Christmas Eve. So most vet hospitals will be open for some hours, but maybe shortened hours on Christmas Eve. And it's really common for people to say, I've just realized that I've run out of Fluffy's thyroid medication and I don't have enough to, you know, get me through. And so we really want people to be proactive about having a look at what kind of products you might need for your pet in advance. Prescription medications may require a revisit, you know, with the vet, and that's not going to be able to happen, you know, short term. And a lot of chronic medications are not going to be stocked by your regular emergency centers. Plus, nobody wants to be sitting in an emergency center just so that Fluffy can get their thyroid medication. Mm. So have a look at what you've got on hand. Lots of vet hospitals this year will be closed for, you know, my hospital's going to be closed for 5 days in a row. So have a look at what you've got in the cupboard. Make sure that you've organized a refill, or if you need a recheck before that refill. Usually vet hospitals will require a recheck every 6 months. And so if you're coming close to that, you might need to get them in. Making sure that you've pre-ordered your dog food or your cat food in advance, because there's lots of public holidays and it can be, you know, delayed. And, you know, some dogs will tolerate really well if you have to just nip down to Woolies and grab a bag. But lots of animals require either special prescription foods, or they just do better on a consistent food. So, you know, have a look, make sure you've got that ordered in advance. If you are going away on holidays and your pet is going into boarding, have a look now and make sure that your pet's vaccinations are up to date, because we know that lots of boarding kennels won't take them if they've, you know, they need to have a good couple weeks before they go in so that they've got adequate protection, particularly if it's a young pet, not under vaccinated, but, you know, hasn't been vaccinated that very many times over its life. So that's really important. Make sure your flea and tick prevention is up to date for being at home, as well as going into a boarding kennel, because in boarding kennels there's going to be, you know, higher chance of them coming in contact, certainly with fleas. Maybe not ticks, but definitely this year is really bad for tick year. My vet hospital has treated more dogs for tick paralysis this year than we have in the last 6 years. So it's really, really bad. You don't want to be late, not even 1 or 2 days on your tick prevention. So make sure that that is up to date. That's really, really important. And then the last two things I'd say is make sure that you know who your emergency contacts are and your microchip details for your pet. So you can actually log in with your account to the My Pet Registry, I think they call it, or New South Wales Pet Registry, and you can look up your pet's details with their microchip. You'll have to find that probably on a vaccination certificate or in their little health booklet that you have for them. And you can check and see that your microchip, that your contact details are up to date. And that's a really common one, because, you know, there'll be things like fireworks and stuff during the New Year's Eve and things like that. If your dog gets out and they run away, if your contact details aren't up to date, it's much harder for us to be able to get them back to you, or for anybody to be able to get them back to you. So have a look, make sure your contact details are up to date. Speak to your local council if they're not. If you've recently moved, you've changed phone numbers or mobile numbers, you've gotten rid of your landline, because, like, not very many people have landlines anymore, but if your dog's 10 years old, chances are your landline is the number that's on his file. So you want to make sure that those things are all up to date and that you're ready to go for the holidays, and hopefully you won't have any troubles.
That's good advice. Well, we've got Kath from Barrington on the line, and Kath, you've got a budgie that's suddenly stopped whistling.
Yes, and my suburb I'm from is Gorrican.
Oh, you're Gorrican, not Barrington.
Yeah,
must have misheard you.
Oh, well, just down the road. All right, so this has happened just in the last few days or the last week? Or
last 4 days he hasn't whistled at all.
Right, okay. And how old is your budgie?
He's 3 years old.
Okay. So, listen, I mean, any change, sudden change in then the behavior or demeanor of a bird, we would always be concerned about, because they're very good at hiding signs of illness until they're unable to, you know, unable to manage it anymore. With budgies, we worry about things like thyroid. They can get a thyroid goiter. Has he been doing any neck stretching, any regurgitation or vomiting, anything like that?
No, and he's eating well.
He's eating well. Yeah, well, sometimes they'll look like they're eating, though, and they're not actually ingesting much food. So you want to make sure that he's producing lots of poops as well, lots of little droppings. That's really important. If you can, I would recommend, you know, certainly you can watch him, but if you've already noticed it for the last couple of days, you know, I would try to get him in to see an avian vet in the next few days if you can. Probably they'll want to do some, you know, some testing of his droppings. They may want to do what we call a crop wash to have a look and see if there's anything going on, infections or things like that in the crop, which is the little sac that sort of stores the food so that it sort of slowly trickles into their stomach. And budgies can get a lot of problems with that. You just have the one little fella?
Yes, just the one.
Yeah, just the one. And so nothing else has changed. He hasn't shown any other clinical signs, just that he's not whistling. Yeah.
Well, I'll do that. I'll get him checked out.
I would, yeah. Definitely worthwhile.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Good luck, Kath.
Thank you. Bye.
All the best, Kath. Rebecca, you've got a border collie cross that's doing strange things.
Hello. Yes. So we went away for a week and a friend of mine was looking after the dogs while we were away. And she rang up and she was like, oh, when I'm playing with Lockie, that's the dog, he'll like go into the bushes randomly and like hide and then he'll come back. And I didn't realize this was weird.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just listening and I thought, is this just a neuroses of him or
so is he's still doing that? He's like, so he's running away or he's
like always done it. Like he'll sometimes he's just tired, like he'll just lay down because it's hot, but then like he'll take the ball and he'll go into the bushes, like specifically one bush, it's a bird of paradise, and he'll like attack the bush and then he'll like come back with the ball.
But that's something he's done his whole life. It's not a new behavior for him?
No. Okay. I never, like, twigged that it was, I mean, maybe I should have.
No, I mean, listen, I mean, my dog is a shade seeker, so we'll be out on a walk, and if she starts to get warm, she'll start to, like, take herself into the bushes to, you know, to go and find herself a bit of shade. She'll go and lie down under a tree or under a bush, and sometimes she will, you know, scooch well in and underneath just to sort of go in and have a rest. I would say that's just something that he's, you know, developed. There, it might have been when it started, when he was, you know, a younger dog, maybe there was a, you know, a dead mouse or something underneath there that was really good, and he developed some sort of an affinity to that particular area. He obviously, if he's actually chewing or you know, sort of playing with the bush, maybe he likes how it feels. Again, you know, lots of dogs will go through and they'll chew on branches or bushes, leaves, various different things. So I would say it's quirky, but I don't think it's necessarily an abnormal thing. I certainly wouldn't call it a neuroses. You know, it would be more concerning if he ran into the bush and you could never pull him out. He wouldn't come back to you or something like that. But if he's just going in and this is a habit that he's done for a long time, I don't think I would worry about it. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just him.
You've just got a quirky dog.
Lucky. Yeah.
Thanks, Rebecca. You have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the line, we've got Dieter from Cardiff. Hi, Dieter.
Hi, hello. How are you?
Good, thanks. You've got an 18-year-old cat that can't be taken to the vet. She might freak out.
It's a rare doll.
Yep.
And she won't tolerate anyone going near her except my wife and myself, even the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're worried. She's in pain. She limps.
Yep.
And she howls.
Okay.
And I've spoken to some vets and even ones that would come and pick her up. But like I say, she won't tolerate anybody picking her up.
Yep. Dieter, the benefit of being a vet is that we have the ability to drug them if we need to, right? So
that's what I was going to.
My favorite saying is a better life through drugs. Absolutely.
Yeah. But how does she get these drugs?
Well, so depending on the situation, you know, in our situation, we would sometimes go out and do a house call. We might sedate the pet and bring them back to the house. We don't need to be able to love and pick her up and cuddle her. I need to be able to just get my hands on her for, 4 seconds to get an injection into her. Sometimes we can, if you have an existing relationship with a vet, sometimes there are things that can be dispensed at home that you can give her at home that will, put her in her food and she might take it that way. And that can help to chill her out a little bit, which will facilitate bringing her into the vet. And we may still need to give her more drugs or, the vet may need to still give her more drugs to sedate her to facilitate an exam. But I promise you, we can always do something. Certainly for lots of cats, putting them in a car, transporting them can be really, really stressful. And some cats are really worked up by the time they get to us. But even in those sort of situations, it's rare that there isn't something we can, can do. We have some pretty handy tools and tricks that we can do to, to help get some drugs into them so that we can handle them.
That's what concerned me. She wouldn't let, even for your 4 seconds, she wouldn't let you near her.
Mm-hmm. My old cat used to we used to give her some medication an hour before she went to the vet so she would be dopey enough that we could just put her in a carrier and take her in and the vets could look after her.
That's what I was hoping to hear, that I could give her something, put her to sleep or something.
I mean, we often use anti-anxiety medications these days to really, really good effect. So I would, call up your local vet, have a discussion with them. It is a bit tricky because some of these drugs are prescription level, drugs. And so different vets have different tolerances in terms of what they will dispense if they haven't seen her for a while or if she hasn't ever been to the vet. But just sort of explain the situation and see how, see how you go. And don't fear, we always manage to, within reason, we always manage to sort of succeed, with the help of medications and things like that.
I definitely won't chuck her in a cage. One vet said to stand the cage up and virtually drop her up in through the door and close it.
Yeah.
And we just can't do that. I mean, the poor thing in the last 2 hours of life will be traumatized. I'm not going to do that to our cat.
Yeah, yeah. So, other things that you can do that can be really helpful are try to desensitize her to being in a carrier and things like that. Invariably, she needs to go into a carrier. She needs to be able to be transported that way safely. So, get the carrier out. Start feeding her in there so that she gets used to the carrier so that the actual act of being in a carrier is less frightening for her as well.
That won't work. We've got to dope her.
I know, but in addition, because anything that we do, she's going to need to be in a cage at some point. So if you can start to desensitize her to that, that would be good. Okay.
Well, I just thought if we could put her a bit to sleep and then put her in a thing and then take her to the vet, I think that would be a much better for her and especially for us because we're traumatized by the whole thing ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And so the other option is to get a house call veterinarian in where she doesn't have to go, and that can be really beneficial as well. And they'll, still be able to get some sedation into her. So,
okay, good luck with that, Dieter. Hopefully you can have some success with your cat. And next on the line, we have Janet from Lake Macquarie. Hi, Janet. You've got a 4-year-old mini schnauzer that nips people.
I have actually. I've got two mini schnauzers, but this little one, for some reason, when we come home or she's very excited, she jumps up and she nips. Like, she might grab hold of clothing or she'll grab hold of your hand or your skin. And they're only little nips. And I thought, well, it's probably excitement. And we've sort of tried to stop her from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had a lot of success yet.
Okay. And so she's grabbing at your pant legs or your fingers or things like that?
Mainly she will jump up and she'll grab at your hand if you go to touch at her. Or if you've got a shirt on or something, she'll grab hold of it. Just a little bit, not a lot, but just a little bit. And it's just the nips are very tiny, but they're still nips.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I would, first of all, if you think there's an excitement component to it, we need to not interact with her while she's excited, okay? So, we want to ignore that sort of excited behavior. We want to obviously keep fingers away from the zone where she can jump up. So that might mean when you come through the door, you've got to have your hands, you know, sort of crossed up against your chest, something like that, where she can't jump up. And we don't interact with her until she's behaving appropriately. You can give her a command. You can tell her to sit. But we really want to just sort of teach her that actually she's not going to be included in part of the as part of the pack until she's exhibiting the behaviors that we want. And that's what we want, is calm, quiet social behavior. So I would, you know, start with that, because she's obviously just gotten into a bit of a habit of, you know, sort of jumping up. Doesn't sound like she's aggressive. She's not trying to stop you coming in the door or anything. So we just need to redirect that energy to something that she can do. Now, if she's really persistent, she, you know, you open the door, you take one step in, and she's running up to you, and she's, you know, sort of biting at you straight away, you might need to do something like have a little jar of treats on the outside of the door, get one out, and as you walk in the door, you sort of roll that down in front of her and try to redirect her away from you and to the treat, so that you get the opportunity to sort of come in, get into the door, so she, you know, she's not at risk of running out, and that you're giving her something other than you that's, you know, exciting for her. So it might be that you need to redirect her excitement that way. But the same rules apply. We don't want to be reaching down for her at all until she's behaving in an appropriate manner, and that means she has to be calm. So it might mean that you actually have to turn your back on her. You might have to walk away. You might have to just stand there, you know, turn around and stand there facing the door and not talking to her until she sort of starts to calm down and, like, gets bored of you.
Sure.
But over time, she'll learn that that happens faster, that she gets attention faster as soon as she plants her bum on the floor and starts, you know, just is acting calm. Okay?
Yeah, that sounds fine. Now, I've got a second one.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another schnauzer, and she's got a phobia about a halter. Like, if I say you want to go for a walk, she'll go, absolutely love to go for a walk, but as soon as I get her lead out, she runs away and hides. And the other one's starting to do it as well.
Okay.
So it looks like she's fearful.
Okay.
We've changed halters. We've got them so they don't go over her head. We've got them so you just do them up on the side.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to matter. She
sure.
just runs away.
And so this, you're talking about a harness that, and you're attaching your leash to the harness. Yes, it's not one of the face halties.
No.
No. Okay.
And her body. Yeah.
Sure. And it's the harness that you think she's worried about, or the leash?
No, it's the harness.
Okay. So probably a little bit of desensitization. So once you get her into it and you're on the walk, is she okay, or is she fretting about it?
No, she's absolutely fine.
Great. Okay.
Goes outside the door, she's fine.
Yep, sure. Again, I would work on some desensitization. So start asking her to wear it around the house, short periods of time, but do it when she, you know, make a positive association. So dinner doesn't happen until she's wearing her harness, and she'll start to realize that actually when this harness goes on, good things happen in my life, and hopefully that will improve. If you think she's getting more and more worked up about it, though, it might be worthwhile speaking to a behaviorist or a vet who can help you with that.
Okay.
Thanks, Janet.
Yes, very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Just like Helen from Fletcher. Hi, Helen. Thanks for waiting. You've got a cat that attacks.
Yes, and I've persevered with him. He's going on six years of age.
Mm-hmm.
I got him from a he was an orphan, like as a kitten in Manly,
and
the son brought him upright, and he's been fine,
mm-hmm.
and I've rung about him before, like behavioural problems, because he will just sit on my lap if I'm there, and then if he doesn't like it, he'll just turn and his eyes just go wild, and he's attacked my arm, mm-hmm. like several times. But why I'm calling this time, he's really sort of hurt me sort of badly and emotionally,
mm-hmm.
because he's and he didn't like me doing it. I think I just pulled the little, you know, rug that he's on my bed up, and he turned and he tried to. I said, no, that's not what you do. It's not appropriate. So I walked wide to the other side of the bed, and see, I walk with a walker,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, no, he's under the bed. And then I'm going to try and get out of here, and I turned around to go into the ensuite, and he literally attacked me with four of his fangs on the back of my calf.
Okay.
And I was like, he just went, you know, just like this. So now I've got little ulcers that I'm getting, having to get dressed. So now what my question was,
yeah.
it hurt me and made me think, oh no, I'm being really nice to you. Why have you done this to me?
Yeah.
And what do I do? And my son said, oh, you know, RSPCA. But the thing is, in my situation, well, he loves my hair. I mean, you know, I'm very kind to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want him emotionally to go to another place. Now, the question is, do you euthanize a cat like that? Like if a dog bites someone, you euthanize
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
But do you do that with a cat?
Oh, it's a really tough call, Helen. I mean, cats that have been hand-reared by humans often have behavioral issues. It's not as easy as just, you know, putting food into them and you get a nice, healthy, normal kitten. They often have behavioral problems. And it does sound like, you know, he's got some issues. That's not normal behavior for a cat to, you know, attack you unprovoked. I would have a chat with a vet about it, to be fair. You know, first things, we want to make sure that there's nothing that's causing him any pain. We want to make sure he hasn't got any dental disease, any spinal disease, those sorts of things. Because cats are not like dogs. They're not like humans. They don't behave in the way that you and I would sort of think of as being logical. They can be very different. So the first place I would always start would be to see if you can get him checked out, see if you can rule out any medical causes or causes of pain that might be causing him to behave differently or to behave erratically like this. Then if you can manage it, and I guess if you like the cat enough to pursue it, I would definitely then try to speak to a behaviorist, have a discussion with the behaviorist. Because again, the way that you and I think logically is not necessarily what's going on in the average cat, and it doesn't sound like he's sort of the average cat either. Cat bites can be really, really serious, and they can, in fact, be deadly. And so I guess you have to think about your situation and about whether or not he's a real risk to you, and it sounds like he could be. So again, have a discussion with your veterinarian about it, because you know, you don't want to get in a situation where, you know, you get a septic infection. And it's not a laughing matter. Cat bites are really, really bad. People, you know, can die from them if they're really bad. So it's a difficult forum to have that sort of discussion. And I think it needs to be done on a one-on-one basis. It wouldn't be something that you would jump to lightly, obviously, but it wouldn't in some cases be inappropriate to consider either. Okay. Cause that's going to be a hard cat to rehome.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. And I thought, well, like, I know it's a question, like if a dog did that, I would just go to the vet and say, please put it down because it bit me. But do you get many cases like that? Oh, you know, my cat bit me several times.
We certainly don't get many cases, but they can be challenging. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can do it if they...
Like I said, talk to your local vet about it. Have a really frank discussion with them about it. But yeah, we want to, you know, make sure that the humans are safe as well.
Good luck with that, Helen. You're listening to Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we're going to have a look at the dog and cat of the week on our website. If you go to 2NURFM.com.au and click on the Pet Chat link, you will find the dog and cat of the week. And firstly, we've got Woody.
So Woody is, they haven't said how old he is, but he's an adult Irish Wolfhound Cross cattle dog. Says that Woody is the biggest cuddle bunny you ever meet, and he loves every person he meets and is the perfect companion dog. So if you're looking for a big dog, first of all, he's a moderately large-sized dog, Woody might be for you. Says that Woody is not a high-energy dog. He prefers lazing around the home, hanging out with his humans. They do want him to be an inside dog. He likes to sleep on a bed on the inside of the house. He's quite happy to join you for a stroll or go and play fetch in the yard, but he doesn't, you know, sort of want to run continuously, so that's good. He is good with children. They think he's good probably because of his size. They've recommended larger children or older children, I should say. And I think I read somewhere that he's also good with other pets. He's quite happy to walk with a calm friend and go past other dogs on a lead. But he prefers calm older dogs of a similar size.
He's very cute.
Very cute. He's in the picture. He's wearing a little cowboy hat
and a
little
bow. It's a Woody hat from Toy Story.
Yeah, yeah. So he's pretty good. So if you're looking for a sort of a calmer adult, medium to large breed dog, Woody might be the one for you.
And now we've got Claire. Claire's a cute little Cat.
Little Claire is a little black kitten. Looks like she's maybe about 8 or 10 weeks of age. She has a bit of a lazy left eye. So she looks at us in the picture with these little crossed eyes, which is quite funny.
Cute.
So she is a typical kitten, a really active little kitten, super confident, loves a cuddle when she's finished playing, enjoys her food, enjoys chasing balls. You know, she's going to be a kitten who is going to be able to grow up with you. At this stage, they say she's great with people. She's a bit wary of dogs still. That's typical of all kittens, you know, and if they're raised with dogs, they often really learn to adjust to, you know, having a dog in the house as well, really well. And at this stage, it says that the eye isn't affecting her. She sees totally normally. So if she was a human, we'd probably put spectacles on her, but that's not really likely.
Although she looked very cute with spectacles on.
Yeah. So obviously with Claire, we want her to be an inside cat because we prefer our cats inside and wildlife on the outside. If you are looking for a cat, then contact these guys about Claire.
Yep, that would be wonderful. Now, we've got Joe from Shoal Bay on the line. And Joe, you've got a Jack Russell that gets very stressed when someone is in the swimming pool and it barks. Or actually, we used to have a dog that did that too. It was very protective.
Yeah.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Yeah, hi, Joe. So this is a little dog who's probably running laps around the outside of the swimming pool and barking and getting really excited by any time that there's someone on the inside. Is that right?
Pretty much,
yeah.
Yes.
But doesn't actually want to be in the pool, not interested in learning to swim himself.
Exactly,
yeah. Exactly. Listen, I think for Jack Russells, that's quite normal behavior. It's not to say that it's not distressing for you. It's hard to know whether they're distressed or whether they're just really excited about all the stuff going on. And lots of times, you know, the dogs like to, they can see you. You're confined in a pool. And if I just keep running around the outside edge, you know, I'm hurting you. I'm keeping you in your place. And maybe there's a ball that's going to come, you know, winging my way or a splash of water. You know, lots of times these little dogs like to sort of splash. If it's distressing for you, though, and certainly it can be quite noisy, you know, I would just get in the habit of locking him away, maybe popping him into a crate with a chew toy, something like that, so he's not getting so worked up about, you know, seeing all the activity that's happening there. And swimming pools, typically, particularly if you've got kids, there's lots of yelling and screaming and splashing and noise, and, you know, that's very easy for a dog to, you know, sort of get a little bit over threshold with. So I would recommend then, you know, popping them in a quieter spot, maybe with something, you know, that they like, a chew toy or a pig's ear or something along those lines, so that he's not sort of getting himself really worked up. It's a tricky sort of thing, but I think it's quite common with little terrier type dogs.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much for your help.
No worries.
All the best, Joe.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks so much. And, we've got about 4.5 minutes left, and I just want to say congratulations to Janet from Lake Macquarie. You have won our $50 pet food voucher, and we will be in touch about that. Now, Dr. Kimberly Earle, have you seen anything else happening around the place? Otherwise, I've got a question for you.
Okay, yep,
well,
go for it.
Okay, so how do you clean cats' teeth?
Very carefully with them sleeping. So cats are actually an interesting creature. They actually get a lot of sort of what we call resorptive lesions, but they're like cavities. They actually get really painful mouths. It's really, really common. But we don't really see them until the cat is sleeping, and we can actually use a little dental probe, find those little cavities. Sometimes in a consult room, I will look in a cat's mouth and see that they've got a really red mouth or red gums. Or if I push on the tooth, they'll jaw chatter, and that will tell me that they've got a painful tooth. Cleaning actually happens just the same way your dentist does it. So the difference is that we give these guys an anesthetic. We put a breathing tube down to protect their airway from any water or liquid going down into their lungs. And then we take an ultrasonic scaler, and we clean those teeth. We crack the tartar off. We do a full dental exam where we use a little dental probe to look for some of those cavities. We'll often take dental x-rays. And cats actually have really problematic mouths. You know, they're not designed very well from that sort of a standpoint. So we end up taking quite a few teeth out of cats because we can give them a much more comfortable and less painful mouth if we take those teeth out that have, we don't tend to fill the cavities. By the time a cat has a cavity or a resorptive lesion in the tooth isn't savable anymore, so we take them out.
So, okay, I've got a young cat, and our vet said, you know, if we got a baby toothbrush and put some water on it,
absolutely,
we could get her used to
brushing.
You know, brushing.
Yep.
But I tried that, and she just looks at it, and then I put a little bit of food on the end, so she might eat the food off the top, and she kind of put it ate the food off, but I couldn't get it in her mouth because it wasn't at the right angle. So.
Yeah, so toothbrushes I think are hard in cats. You can get those thimble like ones that have like a little brush, so they slip over your finger.
The Pixters?
Were
they too spiky?
They're too big. You'd be looking like they're literally like a little thimble that goes over your finger, and they've got a few little rubber bristles on the end, so you can brush them that way. Lots of people though find that if you just take a coarse face washer and just rub that on the gums. And the teeth on the outsides, you're really going to just focus on the outsides of the teeth, not so much on the insides, with a little bit of water and just to abrade, just to take the plaque and tartar off. That's easier because a toothbrush, cats don't have a very mobile lip. You can't lift it up like you can the way you can with a dog. So you want to just have something that you can sort of slip in there, a little rough face washer, and I would just give it a little bit of a scrub, like you're taking a little brush, or a little sponge to it.
But how do you actually get it in the mouth to begin with? Because if the cat just
so you're just lifting up the lip, you're not actually trying to get open the mouth
when they're asleep.
Oh, you can do it asleep or awake, but you'll often find so you're going to have one hand probably like hanging onto their head a little bit. I often will put a hand over the back of the head and at the base of each ear, and then you just sort of lift up the gum and just use that as a little sort of scrubby with the flat of your finger with a little face washer and just sort of in between the gums there
and hope they don't bite.
Yeah, that's right. Most cats will tolerate it pretty well.
Oh, okay. Well, that will help. I'll give it a go and let you know.
And if it's a young cat, getting them used to it now is a really good idea. And just always reward them with a little yummy food treat afterwards so that they go, okay, I have to tolerate this again, but I'll get this really yummy food treat afterwards. And they start to look forward to it.
Okay. Oh, because I'm just more worried that I'm going to get bitten.
It'd be unlikely. No. Well, in a kitten.
Yeah, she's a bit. She can get a bit nippy.
Bit nippy, but, yeah. Don't do it when she's really aroused, when she's really playful. You want to do it, when you've got a calm cat, for sure, 100%. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. That's very helpful. Actually, I might get my husband to do it.
Yeah. And don't persist. Like, if she's really, trying to turn her head and chomp on your finger. But the key is to go along the line of the teeth.
Excellent. Yep. All right. Well, that's killed enough time. I think we've gotten like 8 seconds. So
excellent.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
I will be next year for me and last show next week.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.